Salakaya Chakram Militam Yenatasmai Sri Vodave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yukta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Mitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakan Vitamscha Namaram Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nevisesya Sunyavadi Paschacharde Shatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Nigamakalpaturu Galitam Phalam Sukamukaram Ritagravasam Yutam Vibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mahora Hora Sikabhuvi Babu Kaha Narayanam Namaskritya Nanam Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nashta Prayasuvabhadresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamas Loke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So we're on Canto 4, Chapter 24, Text 55. Tam Duraradyam Araja Satam Api Durapaya Ikanta Pakcha Ko Vanchet Padamulam Vina Bai Tamdurarajamaraja Satamapi Durapaya Ikanta Bhakcha Kovanchet Padamulam Vinabahi Tamdura Rajam Araja Satamapi Durapaya Ikanta Bhakcha Kovanchet Padamulam Vinabai Tamdura Raja Maharaja Satama Pidurapaya. Ikanta Bhakja Kovanchet. Paramulam Vinabahi. Tamdurarajya Maharaja. Satama Pidurapaya. Ikanta Bhakcha Kovanchet. Padamulam Vinabahi. Tam unto you. Durarajam. Very difficult to worship. Araja. Having worshipped. Satam api, even for the most exalted persons. Durapaya, very difficult to attain. Ikanta, pure. Bhakya, by devotional service. Ka, who is that man? Vanchet, should desire. Padamulam, lotus feet. Vina, without. Bai, outsiders. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge, but devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Please repeat, my dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge. But devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? The word satam refers to transcendentalists. There are three kinds of transcendentalists: the jnani, the yogi, and the bhakta. Of these three, the bhakta is selected as the most suitable candidate to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is emphasized herein that only one who is outside devotional service would not engage in searching for the lotus feet of the Lord. Foolish people sometimes maintain that God may be attained in any way, either by karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, etc. But here it is clearly stated that it is impossible to attain the mercy of the Lord by any means but bhakti yoga. The word durarajam is especially significant. It is very difficult to attain the lotus feet of the Lord by any method other than bhakti yoga. My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge, but devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? So that kind of begs the question that when people are the most fallen, how is it that they're given the most difficult process? Yeah, if bhakti is the most difficult stage to attain, and in Kali Yuga everybody is absolutely fallen, nobody is qualified in any respect, then how do the two fit together when we're given, you know, bhakti yoga as the process for our liberation or salvation in this day and age? And of course, that is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is Vadanyaya, Namo Mahavadanyaya. He's the most merciful because he's giving the very highest attainment in a very simple package. here it's mentioned, because Lord Shiva is singing this song. Later on, Prabhupada translates one of the verses that he's giving the process of chanting the holy name. It doesn't actually say that in the Sanskrit, but Prabhupada has translated it that way to emphasize that what this process is also Sankirtan. Lord Shiva is chanting, and the Prachetas are hearing, and he's offering a prayer, he's glorifying Krishna, and he's giving a very beautiful description of the Lord. First of all, of course, he describes the activities of the Lord within the material world, and how everything materially is related to the Lord in different ways. So that's generally the understanding that people have of God. They identify with this material world. If they accept that there is a Supreme, then it's by understanding how everything that they can relate to is somehow or another under his control, or part of his domain, part of his dominion. And in that way they understand God as, you know, the Almighty. I once had I put a comment out once on one of my blogs that Christians and other religions, they don't actually have a full conception of God. In fact, they really don't know anything about God. They know very little. They accept that God exists, but what do they really know? So I immediately got a reply from some Christian, which was unusual, but anyway. And he said, you know, what do you mean we don't know who is God? And then he gave me a whole list of ways of glorifying God, different attributes of God. So, you know, it was impressive. There was about 20, 25, you know, different descriptives of what it means to be God or how to identify God. But every single one of them was tied to his relationship with the material world, with this material universe. Nothing beyond that. Nothing about God himself as the Supreme Person. So this is the way that generally people understand God, by inference. Because if you don't know who the personality of Godhead actually is, how will you actually understand him and what he's doing? That can only be done by inference, by indication. There's also mentioned in this prayer of Lord Shiva how the navel of the Supreme Lord is kind of like a bottomless pit from which universes enter in and come out. That description's there. So it's kind of like a black hole, literally. It's like a black hole, because that's the way the scientists describe, you know, the creation and annihilation of universes or planets or stars, that they enter into some region where they just kind of seem to, they get gobbled up, they just disappear. And from the same region, then they see all this movement and activity which they think is the creation of planets and the creation of stars. So that region where that activity is going on, that appearance and disappearance, apparently, of matter, they're calling that a black hole. So, you know, that's the most mysterious thing to understand. Where is it going? Where does it come from? Nobody knows. So in this way, they're observing the universe, and similarly, the ordinary religionists, they observe different material phenomena and they identify that with the Supreme Lord. Because that black hole, then one may say, you know, that is evidence of the creative and destructive energy of the Supreme Lord. That there is a factor in the universe which is predominating over everything else. And a black hole might be taken as evidence of that, and a religionist would say, yes, that is the evidence of the actions of God, that he's supreme and almighty, he creates everything, he destroys everything, and there's your evidence. It's inference, not directly, but indirectly we can understand the existence of God. And similarly, in all material phenomena, if one's a little thoughtful, he can understand there's some superior power behind it. And if one is a theist, a sura, slightly pious, then he may attribute that, of course, to some kind of directed energy. Or he may recognize it, that it's an energy that is directed, rather. And therefore, because it's directed, there must be a God. So in that way, then, you know, we accept the supreme the supreme Lord, the God of everything, that he is something beyond our imagination, he's something beyond our reach, he's inconceivable in his potencies, and nobody can really know him. So, and that's pretty well what you'll get, that he's inconceivable. You'll get that from an ordinary religious process. But then Lord Shiva, having gone through that stage of descriptive, then he comes to the stage of describing the personality of Godhead and all of his wonderful features. His beauty, his hair, his smile, his eyes, his nose, his belly, you know, his legs, his knees, his ankles, everything. A very detailed description of the personal attributes of the Supreme Personality. And that's where Bhakti actually comes in. One may have some awe and reverence for God the Almighty. And that, you know, is the beginning of Bhakti. That little bit of reverence, bowing down, accepting that the Lord exists. But one has to go beyond that stage in order to fully understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and come to this stage of real Bhakti. Real Bhakti means at that point then real liberation is acquired. As long as one identifies God with this material world, then his destination is to remain in the material world. Or at least, you know, at the most rather, get liberation from the material world. Kaivalya Bhakti, or liberation. That liberation is also in relationship to one's position in the material world. I'm either in it or I'm out of it, but it's the same coin. Yeah, there's a head and tails of a coin. So you're either in the material world or you leave the material world, you get liberation. But the material world is actually the identifier, the point of identification. The Bhakti goes beyond that. Bhakti has nothing to do with, in one sense, the Lord's being in the material world, because that's included. And therefore Lord Shiva has included it. But what he's really talking about is this description, this wonderful description of the personality of Godhead. And what he's saying is that unless you come to that point, your position is precarious. There's always a chance that you'll again come back into this material world, because there's still that tendency to identify God with the material world. So that material world is always there in the consciousness. Whether you accept it or you reject it, you know, whether you're a kami or a jnani or a yogi, it doesn't matter, but there's always that tendency to relate God, the Supreme Lord, with the material creation. So as long as that's there, then there's always the chance that one can fall down again, which Prabhupada mentions many times. Aruriya Krishna Param Param Padapa Patanti Adona Adrita Yusman Angreyaha. Unless one comes to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality, then Adona Adrita, you always have that tendency to come back down to the material world. You have not fully cut off the ties with this material creation. So it's not enough just to know God. It's something, that's the beginning stage. But to really get liberation, to come to the actual liberated stage, you must have this bhakti, full identification with the Supreme Lord as a personality, a transcendental personality, and completely freed from any connection, if you like, with this material world. Because a devotee sees that even the material world is not material, it's spiritual, it's the display of the Lord's transcendental energies in a particular way for a particular purpose. But that identifying the energies of the Lord, understanding the energies of the Lord, can only be successful when we see the personality behind those energies. We must know the person. Then when you know the person, everything else is, you know, becomes understood very easily. But if we don't know the person, then everything else, everything is inconceivable. We may by inference accept that there is a supreme consciousness, there's some kind of connection between all the material phenomena. Things are not going on individually and separately, but there is a connection, that the living beings are all somehow or other connected. That can all be understood. But it's this position of bhakti which is the actual liberated condition of the soul. When we get full shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore one has to try for that. And the Bhagavatam is giving that particular feature, the supreme feature. Therefore the impersonalists, although they're interested in elevation, they're interested in getting out of the material world, they want moksha, they want kaivalya, but they don't like the Bhagavatam. They can't appreciate the Bhagavatam because of this element of bhakti, because of this kind of description that's been given here by Lord Shiva, where he describes the Supreme as the ultimate person. They can't accept that. Therefore, they don't like to delve into the Bhagavatam. Other literatures where they can juggle around and, you know, speculate, that's fine. But when it comes to bowing down and accepting the lotus feet of the Lord, that they'll not do. Because that envy, which leads us all to come into the material world in the first place, is very, very deep-seated. That comes before false ego. False ego is the point of contact of the soul with matter. Yeah, as soon as the soul comes in contact with the material energy, he develops an ego or identification with it. So that's the most subtle of all contaminations, is this ahankara. But beyond that, there's this other problem, which is the envy that leads us to come and identify with the material world in the first place. The idea of, you know, seeing Krishna enjoying and thinking, why is that not me? You know, as soon as that tinge of envy comes in, why is Krishna enjoying, why not me? Then immediately we're separated from him and we're put into his separated energy. We're put into an energy that separates us from the personality of Godhead. And then we stay here until we come to the point where we finally give up that envy and surrender to him and take shelter in his lotus feet again. So we might get to the point where we actually give up our false egos, that ahankara. We may get to that point, moksha, yeah, where we can go into the Brahman and, you know, give up our identification with the material energy. But that's not solved the problem. It does not solve the problem. The real problem is that envy that led us to acquire this false identification in the first place. So that envy has to be simply given up. There's not really any process, you know, that gradually you'll give up your envy by following a mechanical process, you know, or a process of, you know, yoga, of, you know, or sadhana or tyagi or whatever it is. We have to ultimately get to the point where we actually accept that Krishna is better than us in every respect, that he's the most wonderful person, and that therefore I have to just serve him and worship him and love him. So that's a choice. Love is always a choice. Bhakti is a choice. It's when you get to that point, you take Tathakuru. Krishna tells Arjuna everything, all the details, or at least in essence, he tells him all about you know, the different processes of this material world and the entanglement of the soul and how to get out of it. And then after having instructed him, he's still at the end of it. He says, now I've given you everything, all the knowledge, but now you choose what you want to do. Yeah, whether you want to follow my advice or, you know, go on your own particular way. So that's bhakti at that point. You take Chasita Thakuru. Prabhupada says that devotional service begins when that point of surrender is attained. Yeah. Krishna tells Arjuna right at the end, Savadhamam Parityajya, give up everything else, all dharmas. Dharmas means whatever way you identify what you ought to be doing. Sometimes Prabhupada translated dharma as being the essence of something, like the dharma of sugar is sweetness, or the dharma of fire is heat and light. So the dharma of the soul, so Krishna says, you give up all of the dharmas, that means you give up everything that you think is connected with yourself. Whatever other things you thought that you ought to be doing, whatever other kind of identification that you think you have, that dharma, you give it all up and just, you know, surrender to me. That's your real dharma. When you have surrendered to me, yeah, when you've given up your envy, and when you've decided, yes, Krishna actually is the most wonderful personality, and I'm nothing, and I'm just his part and parcel, and I'm in his eternal servant. And now my only business is to just do whatever he wants and please him. That's the point of surrender. And that's where bhakti begins. So the Bhagavad Gita brings one to that point of surrender, if we follow it properly, accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, all the other stuff that's in it, it has to be left behind. You know, the descriptions about yoga and, you know, whatever, karma and all the rest of it. But you have to come to this point of bhakti, of surrender. And then bhakti begins. So the Bhagavatam begins where the Gita leaves off. The Gita brings one to the point of surrender, where one has to make that choice. Do I really want to love Krishna or not? And if we make the right choice, then we can enter into the descriptions that are given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We can understand this song, which is being sung by Lord Shiva. But the others, the yogis and the jnanis, the impersonalists, they can't understand this description at all. They think it's all a fairy tale. That a personality can actually be behind the, you know, practically inconceivable and unlimited cosmic manifestation. How is it possible? So, therefore, bhakti is the most difficult process, although in one sense it's quite easy, the way that it's been delivered by Lord Chaitanya. But ultimately it's difficult because it requires this ultimate surrender. Yeah, it's not just a question of moksha and liberation. Moksha ishyami, Krishna says, I'll give you that anyway, no problem. You don't have to strive for it separately. But what he really wants is this sarva-dharma, parityajya. You give up everything else, literally every different kind of identification that you ever had, what you think you are, just give it all up and just surrender to me. So bhakti is difficult, there's no doubt about it. It's the most difficult of all the processes because it's only through that that we can attain the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter into his pastimes. If one is not fully surrendered, if one does not have genuine love, then Krishna may give that person whatever else he may desire, either materially or spiritually, you know, in terms of merging into his effulgence. But he won't give himself. Ajita, Krishna is Ajita, he's unconquerable. But he's Jita to the devotees, Jitendriya. He is the person who is conquered by love. So you can't get God cheaply. You can't get God by any process other than if he just gives himself. That's the only way that we can get entrance into Krishna's pastimes, into his leelas, into our eternal relationship with him. If Krishna gives it, there's nothing that we can do except yatechchasitata kuru. Now you decide what you want to do, surrender or not. So that's a big decision. And it's something that we experience, you know, in the practice of our devotional lives on a daily basis. Whether we really want to surrender to Krishna or not. Whether I'm doing what I'm doing for Krishna's pleasure or whether I'm doing it for my own pleasure. How much, you know, of my own interest is involved in this activity. That's our daily dilemma. And we have to daily make our choices. You know, whether we want to please Krishna by what we're doing or, you know, please ourselves. So practice. But at least if one has that Shraddha, that initial faith, then by the association of devotees, that faith will increase. That's the process that's given. Lord Shiva is associating with the Prachetas. He's giving his association to them. But he's also associating with them himself. He's feeling enlivened because he knows that they are devotees. And they're feeling enlivened because they know that Lord Shiva is a devotee. So the exchange is very nice, and therefore you get this wonderful glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That can only take place in the society of devotees, not anywhere else. No other society is glorifying the person, Krishna, the transcendental person, Krishna. There may be so many big gurus and swamis and yogis and so many big other, you know, religious organizations. But bhakti can only manifest amongst the devotees, nowhere else. Only the devotees are happy to hear about the personal features of the Supreme Lord, nobody else. So if we want to make progress, then the first step is sadhu sangha. It's very, very important. Without the association of others who are lovers of Krishna, we'll not develop our own love of Krishna. That won't be possible. So Lord Shiva then, he's having this nice exchange. And what is the exchange of devotees? Shravanam Kirtanam. That's the basis. Hearing and chanting, singing the songs that describe the wonderful attributes and personal features of the Supreme Lord, and hearing about them and getting very enlivened, just like in Vrindavan. That's all that's going on, is Shravanam Kirtanam. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, glorifying Krishna, hearing about Krishna's glories, and everybody's in ecstasy. So we have to just enter into that mood then of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting always. So therefore, Prabhupada at the end of this chapter, he mentions that this song of Lord Shiva is Harinam. Yeah, it is Sankirtan. This is what it is. Again, he's doing it in a particular way. This verse, this song that he's singing, he received from Lord Brahma. And then he's composing it in his own way, or repeating it in his own way. It's mentioned that it was given to those who are in charge of the universe. So they know what to do. The Prajapatis. Lord Shiva is also one of the Prajapatis. There's other Prajapatis. They're not ordinary living beings. They're not under the modes of material nature exactly. They're actually creating bodies which are awarded to other living beings according to their karma. That means that they, the Prajapatis, are themselves beyond karma, ordinary karma. Because they're awarding the results of karma to others. If they were under the influence of karma themselves, they would not be able to do that. So they're very special kind of personalities. But all of them, it says, were initiated by this song. They were all given this information by Lord Brahma. Therefore we have the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, Prabhupada says that is one of the most important prayers for the Vaishnavas. Because it describes in a nutshell all of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And particularly, of course, you know, at the beginning of the creation, the manifestation of the universe, when everybody has to be awakened and take up their activities again, then the information has to be there what the real purpose of this whole creation is. And those who were there at the beginning have to know it. They can't be in ignorance about what this material world is and its connection with the Supreme Lord. So this song was sung to them at the beginning, and Lord Shiva is still singing it now to whoever may be qualified. If it was sung to the Prajapatis, then we can imagine how important and elevated it actually is, the understanding that it bestows upon the hearer, and how qualified we have to be to hear it in the first place, to understand it, to have an attraction to it. So that's given to these very, very elevated personalities. So for him to give it to the Prachetas, then also you can understand how elevated they are, or to any devotee. So the privilege of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord is a very extraordinary event. It's not an ordinary thing at all. It seems easy. It seems, you know, in one sense, you know, it's been distributed freely all over the world by Srila Prabhupada. He's just giving it out to anyone and everyone. But it's actually an incredible privilege, because it takes one literally out of this material world permanently. And that can't be, you know, an easy thing. Therefore, it's described that bhakti, therefore, is the most difficult of all processes. So we shouldn't be put off, but we should understand that even for fallen souls like ourselves, we're very minute compared to Lord Shiva, compared to the Prachetas. I mean, what qualifications do we have? You know, we're born in Kali Yuga, we live in these miserable little bodies of ours for, you know, 80 or 70 or 80 years. We're hearing God in a flash. But somehow or another, this privilege has been given to us by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. And all we have to do is just accept it. That's all. Yatech Chasita Takaru. Just accept it. Make your decision. This, if you think this is the best thing, then take it up. That's all. So we have to finish at this point. Any questions or comments? Mahatma Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. What is Krishna's strategy in the Gita? Because it seems he's contradicting himself in the Sarva Dharma, Paritaja verse, because he's explained all these other processes. You know, 17 chapters of other things. I mean, bhakti's there also. And then he comes and he says, just give this all up. So it seems like what he's saying is, well, I've taught you all these things, but actually neglect everything I said and just surrender. So someone would think, well, that doesn't make sense. It seems like a contradiction or a paradox that he spent, you know, the majority of time explaining things that he's going to tell you not to follow. So what's the logic and the strategy?
Yeah, it's interesting. We saw Prabhupada do that many times, that he would speak to somebody if there was a little interest. But the first thing that he would do is, you know, ask a few questions and get them to speak. And they would reveal, you know, what their philosophy was or what their understanding was. And then once Prabhupada knew at what level a person, you know, was at with their own intellect and psychology, then he would start to gradually introduce, you know, the higher concepts of bhakti and bring them from where they were to a higher platform. So in the same way, Krishna starts off with a very simple premise that you're not this body. Considering that Arjuna was so overwhelmed with ignorance, apparently, that he, you know, he became inert practically. He couldn't act anymore. So he starts with a very simple concept that you're just not this body. And then he starts to build up and get into more and more complex issues and explanations. As Arjuna responds and his intelligence gradually awakens, he's given more and more information. So then finally he's, you know, brought to this point that actually the real business is bhakti, you know, just surrender, bhakya mama vijanati. So we don't immediately give people, you know, the full information of bhakti yoga. You know, just give up everything and surrender to Krishna. Nobody's going to do that. They have to be persuaded. At the end, if they're actually following you and, you know, they've accepted, you know, all the previous levels of understanding and they still want more, then you can bring them to that point. So it's a gradual process. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's why the Bhagavatam is so difficult to understand, because the Bhagavatam does begin at that point. Savadaman Parijagya, Mami Kamsaranam Braja. Then it, you know, it goes into the details of how to surrender or what real surrender is. The Bhagavad Gita, therefore, is that preliminary, you know, gradual awakening. And therefore it's very important, because everybody in the material world has their own material identifiers. You know, they have their own dharmas, or what they think is their dharmas. So to get them to completely give them up, you've got to kind of gradually sift through them. Whatever they think they are, all right, then let's hear that, and then start enlightening them and giving them a higher understanding of themselves. Then when they, you know, they start to follow that, you can introduce the information about the Supreme Self, Krishna, and how he's working. And then you come to the transcendental. Any other questions? Last one, yeah.
You say that bhakti begins when you're at the point of full surrender. So at this point in time, you know, what are we doing?
Well, therefore we say that we are not bhaktas. To say that I'm a Vaishnav, Prabhupada said that's a very exalted position, Vaishnav, beyond being a Brahmin. So we're not you know, we're barely Brahmanas, if that. What to speak about being Vaishnavs? I was with Prabhupada in New Mayapur in early August of 76, and Yogeshwara Prabhu was there. And he started off a question, and he said, Prabhupada, if a neophyte devotee, and as soon as he said that, Prabhupada stopped him. He said, neophyte is not a devotee. If it's a neophyte, he is not a devotee. He's trying to become one. So that's, you know, we can't say that we are devotees, that we're, you know, bhaktas, but we're trying to be. Because sometimes loosely we do say, you know, all the devotees, all the Vaishnavas, etc. But really, if you want to get down into the essence of it, to be an actual devotee means, you know, to be back in Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan on that platform. So we're trying. We follow in the footsteps of the real devotees, and we gradually acquire the adhikar to be a devotee ourselves. So that's what we're doing. I asked Prabhupada once, because he'd just been saying how neophyte devotees shouldn't preach. And then at the same time, he was telling all of us to go out and preach. So that seemed to be a contradiction. And I asked him that, you know, you're always telling us to go out and preach, but at the same time, I mean, I know I'm a neophyte, you know, and you're always saying that neophytes shouldn't preach because they don't really know what to say. So how is it that you're always telling us to go out and preach? Prabhupada said, I am preaching, you just assist me. I am preaching. So we're just trying to assist Prabhupada with this preaching, that's all. All the real preaching is in Prabhupada's books, and whatever we can repeat of that, you know, accurately, that's our, you know, credit, that's our benefit, if you like, and it's the benefit of others that hear. Prabhupada understood what was in his books. I can't say that I do. I'm not at that, not anywhere near that stage of fully understanding everything Prabhupada said. So we're assisting Prabhupada, that's all. And we're learning how to become devotees. Okay, we have to finish there. Greeting of the deities in 3 minutes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.